Say What? Say What radio show. With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.
Welcome to the Say What show. This is a special presentation of Woo Reality, a series of podcasts that will be made into a book, hopefully. And we are on chapter 12, and the date is March 6, 2026. And my name is Nancy Hopkins. Last chapter, I played actual radio. Hadn't gone off live. This was a recording of myself and Walt Silva dealing with the Gold King mind spill that happened back in 2015. It was the only way I could really tell the story. I know it was a little technical, but it was the way to show you what goes on in what we do, essentially. I want to do the same thing, but this time, Ani Avedisian, the mad shaman, will be joining me for a recording that was done on January 9th, 2021. We're talking about the Spear of Destiny. And the Spear of Destiny comes down through history as being the spear, although the spearhead is what's, you know, still available. Well, I'll tell you that in a minute. But so the spear, you know, which is on a long pole, isn't there, but the spearhead is. But this was supposedly the spear that was the symbolic symbol, I guess you'd call it, of the Jewish people. Now, first off, if you try to find any history regarding the symbol of, you know, the spear, I don't find it. I have not been able to see this pop up except at the time of the crucifixion. It was supposedly being held by a Roman centurion, which is essentially a captain in the Roman army, who was overseeing the execution of Jesus Christ. His name was Cassius Longinus, and he had cataracts, so he was almost blind. But he's on a horse, and he's overseeing this execution of somebody that he only knew by reputation. He had never met the man or anything. And he was, you know, done a lot of these executions. And while he was there and Jesus was on the cross, something happened to Longinus. Something that made him feel the love and compassion for Jesus that he had not experienced before. He was a soldier. The crucifixion was hurried up. They needed him dead before the sun went down so that they could bury him by Jewish law. That's one story. That story is one of, let's say, a story, a stage presentation that was supposedly put on by the Essenes to create a martyr. And the raising from the dead was not raising from the dead, because as the story goes, when a sponge was put up with vinegar on it, which was part of the torture that they would do to these people, up to the Jesus's mouth, right after that, he said, "It's finished," and he seemed to have died. That's one story. The other story is that they needed to kind of hurry up this crucifixion. Normally, they would leave him up for days, but probably the Romans didn't want to have to, you know, basically guard somebody who was dying on a cross for however long it might have taken, because sometimes it could take a while. So this story with Longinus says that because they were needing to get him dead, the Roman soldiers went over to break his legs, because the only way somebody being crucified can breathe is to put pressure on the legs so that you've got your lungs can expand to breathe. If you break the legs, they can't do that. They die very rapidly. And as they went towards Jesus to do this, Longinus was compelled to go up to the cross and Jesus on it, and to use his spear that he was holding, the ceremonial spear of the Jews, in order to kill him before he had to see watch him tortured by breaking of the legs. When he punctured the body of Jesus, blood and water came out of the body and splashed into his face. And when that happened, all of a sudden Longinus could see. And the history of Longinus you can look up. There's certain books that have been written about it. How true they are, I don't know. But he's a real character out of history. You also see depicted the wound in his side from a spear on a lot of the Christian drawings and whatever. That's a story of where the spear started to show itself in history. Essentially, the next time you see it is with Charlemagne, a French king, lived in the Middle Ages, in the early part of the Middle Ages. By that time, there's a legend that if you have a right to own the spear, you will control the world. It was not the first time the spear was used. It's sort of the first time we pick it up historically, but then you can go back and you can find out that there were other episodes of some very powerful person having the spear. But the legend goes on and says that if the spear is dropped in battle, the man who dropped it will be killed or die thereafter. I'm not sure how specific it is. But in fact, Charlemagne did drop the spear and he did die. So the whole story about the spear can get very convoluted at this time, because Charlemagne's empire was broken up into the Habsburg Empire. And you have, different countries that come out of the Habsburg, which had been originally the control point of Charlemagne out of France. The spear was finally, and there's no, again, I don't know how what the history is of it, but the spear ended up in a museum in Vienna, the Habsburg Museum. And this was in by World War I. Well, in World War I, a man by the name of Adolf Hitler, a young man, ended up going to the Habsburg Museum and looking at the spear and having some kind of a metaphysical, spiritual awakening. Something happened when he looked at it. I don't want to get into the whole history of Hitler himself, but when he became the Chancellor of Germany, 3 days after he was granted the leadership of the German nation, now we're just before World War II, he went to Austria, Vienna, went to the museum, and claimed it as his own. And then it was transferred to Germany, to the Nuremberg Church, with other regalia of the Habsburg Empire, regalia being, crowns and scepters and that sort of thing. And there it sat while he took over the world. The first bombing run that the Allies made, Great Britain and the United States, on Germany, one of the targets was the church. Now, whether it was a set target or it just got hit, I don't know. But it scared them because the church were the, and the, this was a lot of money too, never mind the metaphysical aspects of it. And what seems to have happened is that they moved the spear. There was a couple of soldiers who had escaped being captured in Germany. And when they got back to Allied lines, they were debriefed by intelligence officers that happened to work for George Patton. George ends up talking to them or seeing the report. I'm not sure what again, it's kind of lost in the murkiness of history. But he suddenly realizes that Hitler had the spear of destiny, and he believes that it's a way of ruling the world with permission from the higher gods or whatever, and that they needed to break the spirit of Germany. So Patton reports to Churchill that this is the situation, and together they decide, all right, so let's put together a small unit to look for the spear as we go through Europe. Let's try to find it. Well, they never found it until they had already gotten to Nuremberg, the Allied army. And there was a group, a platoon of American soldiers who I suspect actually were out looting rather than looking for a treasure. But they found an opening in the ground, and it turned out to be the opening to a cave. And when they went in that cave and they got to the farthest point in that they could go, there was a door, like a vault door, like on a bank. Well, this was all reported, and I've seen the report. This was reported to higher command in Nuremberg. And at the time that this report was supposedly written, in Berlin, Adolf Hitler supposedly committed suicide. So, an interesting coincidence if that was what the situation was. But George Patton was very much aware that this thing existed. And as far as I've been able to determine, he was the only Allied leader that actually went to where the cave was, tunnel, it was more like a tunnel, and to actually see the spear. The story you're about to hear is what happened after that. And you're going to find out why Ani Avedisian got involved in it and what happened and what it means. And it's one of the major woo-woo events that I've ever been involved with. And the same goes for Ani. So I hope you find this a great story, because it is a great story. And I hope that you're able to make your own determination as to whether this is a true story or just a story. And so I'm going to play that for you. It's going to take us basically to the end of this hour. And then we'll decide where we're going from there. But once you hear this, I think you're going to find an aha moment. Ooh, is this true? Who knows? Thank you. Enjoy it. How are you doing?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling strong, but I think we'll probably share what happened between us yesterday. I'm physically going through some very strange things, and I will do for quite a few days yet, and we will discuss why that is, because it's all 100% your fault, Nancy Hopkin. I was having a wonderful evening. I took most of the day off. I was gearing up to watch a lovely murder mystery with my sweetie before going to bed, and then all effing hell broke loose. And it's you who did it, you.
No, because I when I called you, I didn't think you'd be able to talk. Because, I really, respect the limited time that you have to talk to anybody.
Right. But
So you
you're going
answered
to
the
have to.
phone. It was your fault. You answered
You who
the
started the call? Who started the call? Who called who?
phone.
You called me. It's your fault.
Well, I asked
And you were.
permission. I asked permission. I said, "Ani, I need to talk to you. It's about a spiritual question." That's what I said.
And so
And you
I
said,
picked up the
"Anytime." And I said, "How about now?"
phone. About now.
Oh, okay. I'll call you. Ring, 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 ring. Okay, Ani, so let me tell you.
Right, you're gonna have to start the explanation, and now I'll fill in my part.
Oh, okay. All right. So, anyway, where do I start? Because I don't want to go back into the full ramifications of everything. But there is, well, how am I go? All right, wait a minute. I've got to ask. Okay, I'm getting confident. You ask too, because this is important. Do we tell the story in its full its full rendition?
We don't have to do a blow by blow account, but we can certainly we don't have to skip anything other than, we don't have to flesh it out into a novel.
Okay.
But,
All right.
we can do bullet points.
Okay, so people who have listened to me over the years know that I believe that George Patton was one of my incarnations. Now, recently in the last year, there's been the question raised, is Trump a reincarnation of Patton? And when you look at comparison pictures, it's like, well, they sure look alike, and I felt, yes, that's probably true, because I know that we don't necessarily have only one incarnation after we die, because it doesn't make any sense. If we're here to learn, then the concept of learning is don't limit your soul. So why should your soul be limited in one new version of yourself? Instead of, thousands maybe versions of yourself, because you could have, if you think in terms of karma, you could have so many different ways of fulfilling karma and even more ways of learning. So I've always believed that you can have, I put it in quotes, spontaneous incarnations. So, if Trump and I both have a link to Patton, I find it interesting, but it didn't become critical to me until last night, because George Patton was one of the, at his time, one of the most vocal metaphysicians alive. I mean, there was a lot of metaphysical and secret and occult things happening in that time frame. But from a standpoint of just one human being saying, "Yeah, I remember my past lifetimes," blah, 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 blah. I mean, he was very open about it. But I think, and there is no record of what he may have known beyond that, but I think he was really, really connected. But on two different layers. One layer being, connected to a let's say a spiritual force, a warrior force, some force that is, your mission is to do good against some really evil dudes. That's, like a, I don't even know how to put it. Maybe a Knight Templar type of guy, But when he confronted the end of the war and realized that the evil that he was confronting was much beyond the German people or the Japanese people, that this was truly demonic. And so one of the aspects of that war was the battle for good and evil that a lot of people felt, but they didn't understand the full implications of it. It just wasn't a battle of good against evil, Nazi against capitalism or democracy. It was more than that. It was another battle between God and Satan. You know, the true concept of, you know, the God force, the loving force of which, you know, we're all part of. The sum total of all life is God, the source. But what happened was that he began to get very vocal about what he was seeing. And the 3D people say, oh, we got to get rid of this dude. This dude's too damn dangerous. But they still couldn't, you know, he had such a presence in the world that they didn't assassinate him until he began to make the spiritual connection. At the time of World War II, just before, Adolf Hitler went in as a, you know, I don't know how old he was, but it was before he was a chancellor or anything. He was a bum making drawings on postcards. It was how he was making his money. He had been in the military. He had been gassed. And sometimes when you have a near-death kind of experience like that, sometimes your psychic energies kick in. I don't know if that's what happened to him or had been that way all his life. But by the time we get to him in Vienna after World War I, he goes to the Habsburg Treasure Museum, and he walks in there and he comes up to a thing called the Spear of Destiny. And a couple of shows ago, I told you a lot about it. Now, when Patton had a whole, they were searching for the spear because they knew that Hitler believed in its power. Now, probably Patton did too. And maybe Churchill even. But those people needed to get that away from him so that he wouldn't have the belief that he was going to win. So they were actively searching for it. So they did find it. And Patton was the only known dignitary of the Allied forces that went to see the Habsburg treasure that was underground in a vault. And he walked in, and he walked directly to where the Spear of Destiny was, and when he looked at it, he saw the Spear of Destiny. But then something happened, and the people that were there with him, they said that he walked up to it, looked at it, turned around, said it's a fake. But it really is something else happened, because in the divine inspiration of the universe, the Spear of Destiny has a history and an energy associated with it that I'm not going to get into. Anyway, so what happened was that while he walked up to the spear, the powers that be, the good guys, the spiritual God, whoever, took the energy of the Spear of Destiny and actually put it in his body. So then he looks at it, and it's fake. He doesn't realize that he's now carrying the energy of the Spear of Destiny in his body. And when he died, that energy was put into three different stones. And then they manipulated to get me those three different stones. Now, I had no idea about this until Gene Rockefeller called me up one night and said, Jack said to tell you, you've got to get the Spear of Destiny and put it together. It's in three pieces, and you got to get out into the Merkaba, which is the sacred spot in this property that we work, energy work, in 20 minutes. Well, to make a long story short, I actually did it, put it together, took it out there, went through an incredible ceremony. I've done virtually hundreds of ceremonies out there, and I've never had one that was this weird. But I went through it, and at the end, I was playing the flute. Now, I was playing the flute like I had never played the flute before. And I was in a space that, you know, it's just a lovely space of totally, you know, being one with everything. And all of a sudden, there was an explosion, and I looked up. I got thrown back into 3D. I look up, and the Spear of Destiny is now shattered again. And I kind of frantically am putting it back together, and I hear his voice, clear as a bell, guy is saying, "Never again." So I went, "Whoa." And so I actually took the pieces in one at a time. I did not put them even in my hand together again. And my interpretation of what she said was that human beings would never wield the Spear of Destiny again. She had it. And so years go by, and everything is fine. And then one day, I get this. I was doing a radio show, and I am cleaning up. You know how you do before you get everything. I'm cleaning up, and there's a paper towel with something in it. But I didn't realize there was something in it. I thought it was a paper towel, and I picked it up and started to throw it away. And I went, "Wait a minute!" And I opened this thing up, and there's a piece of elite shungite in the shape of a spearhead. And it just left my hand, levitated up, and spun around in front of me. And I'm like, I have never been so tranced out, ever. Never even came close to it. And I was just like, and I wish I remember what show it was, because the show started up, and I was still like whacked. And I can tell it in the way that I had just was in slow motion, and it was like, I mean, I could hear it over, you know, in the recording. But so we're having the Trump thing here, and for years the Spear of Destiny is, because that's what it was. That's what I got. This is the Spear of Destiny, and I'm like, "Guy, why did you send it back to me? What's this about?" So I had absolutely no idea what it was, why. It may be that the Spear of Destiny is back in my hands. But I hung it above the computer. And for years, it's been just sitting there. So I get the feeling that I've got to do something with it. But now you get into some really kind of philosophical questions. Because if I'm being led to do something with the Spear of Destiny, that means that, oh, crap, now a human being is now claim, because you have to have a right to claim possession. Okay, that's part of the ruling of it. And I obviously had the right to claim possession, but was that the thing to do? So I run through all the people that I know who might be able to understand where I'm at, to get a little clarity and a little guidance, because there is so much turmoil out there right now. I wouldn't trust myself to do a reading and be clear on it. I'd want to check in with somebody else, because it's just too convoluted and just too much information. So I go through my whole list and I go, "Nope, there's only one person that can help me out here, Annie. And so I message her, "Annie, I need to talk to you on a spiritual question." And that's how she and I got communicating on the telephone. So I'm going to throw it over to you.
Yeah, so Nancy calls me with a spiritual issue, and I thought, you know, her dog was sick or something, you know, that sort of thing. I didn't think it was going to be anything so major. So she calls me and tells me the story that she just told everyone, and I immediately, you know, felt the buzz, as we say. And as we talked a little bit further about, you know, should she claim the power and what should be done, and I'll just briefly interject here. My job before I, you know, started working with the civilian population was analyzing and understanding the machinery of how evil is drawn into this realm, used, disseminated. So the mechanics of evil and how it's used is pretty much one of my specialties. And I wish it was something else like making apple pie, but that's what it is. And over the years, I have learned to glean the information and the intel that I need and process the very dark and deviant energies that I've had to work with and, you know, continue to work with. But I haven't worked on anything this dark and this weird for I'd say at least 5 or 6 years. So when, you know, the message that came to me for Nancy was just do whatever you're motivated to do. Nobody has any doubt that whatever it is in your hands is supposed to be in your hands and you're supposed to do something with it. And then from my point of view, what happened is, and I'm sitting in my home office in a small city in Oregon, and I could start to smell moss, like greenery, and the green man appeared to me. And the green man appeared to me first initially in his true form, which is not the pretty little thing that you see in tourist shops all over England. It's a primary planetary embodiment of all of the goodness that is in the elemental energies of the universe. Every planet's primary embodiment usually is some manifestation of the green man. And it's not always very pleasant to look at either, because it's rather unusual. And the green man came and he stared at me. He completely filled the office. The whole office was damp and reeking of a forest, which is not unpleasant, but it's not what you expect in your apartment, in suburban Oregon. And then he morphed into a more humanoid representation of himself, with a beautiful scarlet robe with gold trimming and the elk horns, holding all of the symbols of the elements, north, south, east, west, earth, air, wind, fire, ether. And I honestly can't remember the conversation we had blow by blow with Nancy, but I think what Nancy was asking me is, do I have to do something specific? Am I being given instructions? And that's when he morphed into his ceremonial outfit. And when he morphed into a ceremonial outfit, he said, no, there's nothing for you to do in physical form. You'll get to do it later on when you join together, you and Nancy, in astral form. It's already done. In the continuum, it is complete. We have one. I am wearing the ceremonial garb and appearing to you, I would say, almost as a human, to show you that humankind will awaken, has awakened, and will overcome these very deviant. The words that the elementals use to describe what's going on here is deviant, these deviant energies, and they will go back into harmony and balance. But I know how this goes from my previous work. When this great benevolence appears to you, something is being transmuted, and I'm not unaccustomed to transmuting. This is not an ego thing at all, because there are people I'm sure would do this much better than I. But as a veteran of the psychic wars, having worked for multiple organizations, mainly nefarious ones, I have learnt that as I dismantle and as I understand how the machinery of evil works and how it's going to be used, I have to absorb and transmute some of it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to work with it, because this is filth, really. It's just absolute filth. And I felt the presence of the green man. I knew that nothing would happen to me. But I also know that I live in a physical body, with millions of years of DNA error coding. And I also know that I haven't taken particularly good care of myself over the years. So as this energy came into me, well, physically, I felt nauseated. In fact, I had to hang up and go and take care of that and then come back and finish my conversation with Nancy. And I just felt, and I had a message for that over the next 3 days, I'm going to be transmuting all of this filth. And I'm feeling exactly how I felt when I used to do this in the old days. I feel strong in spirit, but my body is ice cold. If you were to touch me now, you'd be terrified. And I cannot hold anything down except hot tea. So I knew that Nancy wasn't, I knew she hadn't had a couple of beers and got snookered. I knew that this was the real thing. Then she sends me a picture of the object that she's talking about. And it was almost as if there was an earthquake happening in my room. Everything shook down to the nanocell, subatomic, photon, particle level. And then we had to absorb that and go through that. Once that began to settle, we were discussing again with Nancy, what are we supposed to do? And the green man, now back into his original, I would say, awesome, raw form, reeking of raw greenery. He says, when you, something along the lines of tonight, tonight, when you go to bed, you will do, you know, you will do whatever it has to be done. You don't even have to set the intent because everything is done. All we're doing now is what we call in my trade, a ritual of affirmation, which means it's already done. You're just giving thanks. Okay. So, eventually I did fall asleep and the dream that I, and I'm a lucid dreamer. I remember pretty much all of my dreams in the greatest detail because that's the intent I set. In this particular case, I'm just going to show you, I'm just going to share with you exactly what I dreamt. A long time ago, when I started doing work with the darkness on the other side, while my body was asleep, I had an experience where I would, I met these group of Sephardic Jews, and not so, Hasidic, with the little dangly things, and you know, and that outfit, except that they were wearing the hat and they had the locks of their hair, but they were wearing white boiler suits, very large, very, very white skinned, very chubby men. And they were holding these giant water hoses and they were all smiling at me and joking. And with the water pressure, they bust open a portal into a mountainside. And I went and they said, go into the mountainside with these Marines and rescue the people who are stuck in there. And so I did. And I said, well, why do I have to go if you've got Marines? And they said, the Marines can't see what you can see. Anyway, so I just wanted to mention that. That was the very first time years ago when I was a very young person that I went in and I started doing this kind of astral work on the other side. And it always seems to be in a cave or embedded in rock or someplace that these my chubby Hasidic boys are assisting me with. So. Back to last night, went to sleep, didn't particularly want to go to sleep, but went to sleep because I knew I had to. And I have a vague recollection of Nancy saying she had to do something in the house, but she would be right there. She would be right there as soon as she took care of some business. And when she arrives, we go into this cave that we didn't have to blast into. And there are all sorts of elemental stewards there in ceremonial robes. And it's a sort of a, they said it's a revelry. We're having a revelry. In modern day, you would, I think, call that a party. So Nancy and I go in there and we're given this concoction that you don't have taste buds on the other side, but it would be a very sweet punch. Nothing I'd have in real life, but it was delicious on the other side. And we witnessed a silent ceremony. And all we were required to do was witness it. And the interesting thing is that I can't speak for what Nancy felt. When I unmute, she can fill you in. But what I felt was as if when I drank that very sweet red punch, I started to get very, very sleepy. And I started to, you know, like the Doctor Who spiral, I started to go through all sorts of light waves back into my bed. And that was because I think neither of us wanted to leave. We wanted to stay there, but our participation in this particular event was complete. And two things I was told before they forcibly removed us, gently removed us, I should say, from that place, is one, that I have to fast for 24 days. So if I'm in a bad mood for the next 24 days, it's Nancy Hopkins' fault. And that for 3 days I was going to be, I would have to really keep it together because I was going to be very, very ice cold. But there was nothing further for us to do. We had done it. And also that in this life, this lifetime for both of us had every incarnation we've ever had where we suffered or executed or tortured in our defense of the truth and the light. This was the last time we would have to do it at this density. and all points in time and space for us had led to this moment. And from this point, our activity, we could retire tomorrow and it's fine. Our input, we're not going to, I know that, but our input is no longer required. It was like such a completion. We have done what we were supposed to do. And I have a feeling that if they hadn't removed us, giving us that spiked punch, I would never have wanted to come back, because the feeling in that place was just amazing. Now I'm going to let Nancy take over.
Okay, so I go, excuse me, I laid down. I said, okay, the Green Man was in ceremony. I'm expecting that's a party. I love parties, so I want to go to the party, and I would like Ani. I'm expecting that Ani would be there too. So I'm got it in my head to go to the party. And I lay down, and all of a sudden something happened. I had to get up and go take care of something and come back, just like you said. Okay. So then I get into the bed, and I'm going like, okay, party, Ani, party, Ani. And then I woke up. I have no recollection, I never do, of being on the other side. And that's simply because I said years ago, look it, I understand that Nancy has an entire life that happens when Nancy's asleep. But I really, it's like, it was drama to me. I wanted to just work on Nancy, not all of the other things that I do when I'm asleep. Because they were doing that to me. You know, and I'd be up all night. I was working an all-night job anyway. But it was like my mind wouldn't shut down, and it wasn't like I was thinking about things in my life, Nancy's life. I was experiencing other dimensions, other things. You know, please stop. I can't handle it. I just want to take care of Nancy. So, I you know, I said to Yanni, I said, well, you'll probably have to tell me what happened, because I don't remember these things. But when I woke up, I immediately, I mean, I went from, you know, thinking Ani party to waking up and going like, oh, I got it. And what I got was that, yes, I mean, as you're talking about it, I remoted it, you know, and I was there. I can say all this. And it was the witnessing thing again. And anybody that's been listening to me for the last 10 years, you know that they can do any of this without us. They don't need us, but they need us because they need the witnessing.
Right.
So, you know, it's just as simple as that. Storytelling. So, but what I realized is that, and it made so much sense to me, okay? So you got Patton, who ends up with a spear in his body. Then Patton dies. The spear is then put into three pieces of mineral. And I will tell you that when Donald Trump was in Florida, and he was, before he was nominated as the candidate, when he was just trying the primaries and trying to get there, one of the people that I know ran up to his limousine, reached in, handed him a piece of shungite, and said, please, just take this. And he looked at it, and he said, oh, I love minerals. I just remembered that story. Okay. So, anyway, so if both myself and Donald Trump are, you know, continuations of the spiritual experience of our spirit or our soul, that we both had the Patton experience, but then, you know, you've got these, we won't going off on our own ways. It makes so much sense to make sure that you got one person who is totally committed to the spiritual side of existence, i.e. me, and somebody who can do what he couldn't do, what Patton couldn't do, which was to tell the truth to the world, to have such charisma. I mean, one of the things that Patton was damn sure he made right this time was his voice. If you ever hear George Patton talking, he is not Scott talking booming from the movies. He has got this very little voice like this. I mean, it's ridiculous. You're looking at one of the greatest generals in the world, and his voice sucks. So he needed a voice to be able to reach out to the people. He knew that on his deathbed. You know, this is an attack on the humanity. I've got to fight for humanity. And the last words he said was, it's too late. And then he said to his wife, he said, it's too late. And he said, no, it's too dark. So, and the last thought he had in his mind was, I'm going to remember. So I don't know how much Donald Trump might remember, but I remember, like, virtually everything. And, you know, so it would make sense that I would get the spiritual side of it. I've got the story about the spirit destiny and how it ends up in my possession. But when I, okay, so Annie says to me, she says, well, first thing she said to me, I just sent her, I said, okay, you want to see the spirit? I'll take a picture of it. Okay, so I send her the picture, and she, it opens up, and she goes, okay, I really have to puke now, and I'll call you back, but do whatever, you know, and she had just said, we were just having a conversation about, do what you feel right. He kept saying that, you know, like, just whatever your impulse to do, do it, right? And so I've had this here for years. I have never thought to put it on my neck. When I got the elite Shungite and realized that, oh my God, you sent me back the spirit of destiny, then they had me take hematite wire. And normally when you're making an organ energy device, you rotate the wire in one way and that's it. But no, they had me go back and rotate it the opposite way. So I've never made, and this is the only time they ever directed me to make a device like that. And then, so I made a pendant out of it, and then I put it on a rather large piece of gold chain that one of my bosses gave me. And it had been sitting, I mean, hanging over the computer for all these years. But when she went to puke, I said, huh, I'm putting this sucker on. And I put it on, and it was like, oh yeah, this is how it feels. It was just like this complete stabilization, this amazing, I'm together here, you know, all I wanted to do was, and I had a hard time going to bed too, honey. So what I'm saying here is that when I had put that on, okay, and I told her, yeah, I put it on, you know, what happened was that my energy field and Trump's energy field have a very similar, what we call signature, okay? If you look at them, they're going to both look pretty much the same. His experiences make it his different. My experiences make mine different. But that basic core from being, you know, projections from the same soul is there. And when I put that on, it went on his neck too. When I put it on, Trump got the same energy. And so then, you know, like I'm like, oh, well, that was easy. You know, but then I got another download of information, and it's regarding the fact that it wasn't just Trump, because one of Trump's signatures in his energy field is this unbelievable connection to the MAGA movement, to the people. You can feel it. They feel it. We feel it. You know, we're all on the same mission. And there's so you get this continuity of an energy signature tying yourself to MAGA and Trump. So when he got it, so didn't every patriot, not just in the United States, but every human being who understands what we're fighting for. We're fighting for the rights that God gave us. That's why we so easily say God's got our back, because God didn't send us here to be, you know, tortured. God sent us here for a lot of reasons that I, you know, go ahead, honey, get me out of this.
We decided to put ourselves to the torture all on our own. That had nothing to do with God. Like the Dalai Lama says, pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. So what happened last night was very much needed. You putting that on your neck, very much needed infusion, because most of the MAGA people don't really know what's going on either. And I think it helped everybody to get some clarity and to feel supported and to understand better the messages that we get from certain organizations whose names we can't mention, you know, to fight the good fight and to trust the plan and all of that. I also just remembered, you know, if anything that needed to be transmuted, I promise you, that's what I've been actively doing, and I will be doing it actively for days. So this might, actually might jumpstart my weight loss, which might not be a bad thing. But I remember my mother telling me a while ago, when I first started talking about deep state, and well, I've talked about deep state for decades, when I started talking about Trump and coming out for Trump, my mother said Donald Trump came to her in a dream, just in his underwear, which apparently are tidy whities, you know, her nice little clean white underwear. And, you know, when someone appears to you in the underwear in a dream, they're not hiding anything. They're being honest with you. It wasn't obscene. He was wearing the underwear. And he said to her, my little 82-year-old Armenian mother, he said to her, "Don't worry, Daisy. Everything's going to be fine. And I've got your daughter. She'll be fine." And she couldn't figure that out. And of course, now she does. And I have to say, he's come to me in dreams several times just to check in, pat me on the head, you know, assure me that everything's okay. So, you know, no coincidences in life, Nancy. It's great doing podcasts with you, but the entire reason we hooked up might have been last night, because never was that energy of support needed so much to support the machinery of the light on this planet as it is now and for the next 9 days.
Well, interestingly, when we during part of the beginning of the conversation, and I was trying to set up my question, which was, do I have the right to do this? And the response from the green man was, you already claim dominion.
You know, let us all be encouraged that the machinery that supports the light is growing in the energy streams of integrity and illumination. And the machinery that constructs and disseminates evil is dismantling. And now more than ever, those of us who, it is not a time to wake up sheep. They're not going to wake up. This is a time to support each other. More than ever, we step away from doubt and we ask ourselves this question. If you're on a spiritual path, you either trust God or you don't. You either believe in the laws of the cosmos and the process of co-creation, and you either ride the light waves of divine grace or you don't. You either believe you're a magnificent space adventurer, having a temporary individualized manifestation as a human being on this planet at this time of major significant awakening, or you don't. And each and every one of us is here at this time because we knew the potential of this happening. When we chose this reincarnation from Nirvana on the other side, we knew that we would have a part to play. And not everyone's going to have a front row seat. You know, like you could be like me, have a real back row seat and just be one of the grunts that, you know, just does the machinery part of it. But the most important thing you can do is not give in to the fear and the terror, because these people are Luciferians. They do not co-create with God. They do not ride the streams of co-creative love as we do. They have to create a certain energy to feed from. And the only way they can do that is to make you terrified and subservient. The minute we tell them to F off, it's all over. And it will be in just a few days' time.
And with that, and welcome back to the Say What Show. One of the wilder ones we've had. It's January 9th, 2021. Ani.
Yay. Yeah, man. You know, I say this, I say a lot of things. I talk for a living. This last year, everybody has been running around like a diabetic rabbit, completely confused and, you know, going from one thing to another. This is the time, you know, if you guys, most people just don't know what's going on. Most people don't know that there's anything that has to go on. I mean, we're living in a generally unaware population for the most part. This is the year to really focus on you. All we want is to be a better version of ourselves each and every day, not to be in competition with each other. But this is the time, there's so much monastic, so much Christ of light or the supreme cosmic light pouring into the planet, allowing us the illumination so that we can see the corruption bubbling to the surface. This is not the time to run around like a blue-arsed fly. This is the time to go, okay, wow, I'm learning things I'd never learned before. How do I possibly deal with it? This is what I hear in my line of work all the time. How do I deal with it? Only the whole world's gone mad. Well, make sure you're not mad. How do you know the world's gone mad? Are you in your right mind? This is the time, as Nancy says, for harmony and balance and right-mindedness, and to align yourself with whatever superpower you think cosmic intelligence is, and to ride those light waves. We're all busy running around, you know, people, oh, Democrats, oh, Republicans, and you're an idiot, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and we're all guilty of it on some level. But this is the time to take advantage of the beautiful Christed light that is pouring into the planet to expose corruption. It does a lot more than expose corruption. It's Christ light. Drink it up. Absorb it into every nano cell of your being. Wake up each morning, go look in the mirror and go, good morning. I am supreme cosmic intelligence in action, aligned with hierarchy of light. Wow. That's a pretty good posse. I think it's going to be a better day today. And just don't overthink things. Just as they say in the basic tenets of metaphysics, be. And if you're illuminated, you will have clarity and things will flow through you and you don't have to hold on to it. So don't think that it's selfish at this time just to be focused on being a better version of you because, babe, that's all there is. You made soul contracts based on your soul's evolution, and the people that made soul contracts agreements with you made them based on their soul's evolution. And it's of mutual benefit that we all play off each other, otherwise we wouldn't have formed these soul groups. You know, like Nancy and Trump, for example, are in the same soul group. We're all playing out this giant computer game, and that doesn't trivialize our experience. We are, all of us, writing this story for one purpose and one purpose only. When Source self-expressed, we had eons of non-physical life. When we started to go into physical life and make our universes more multiple and larger and more complex and more people, that was really bad English, sorry. But you know, when we started to grow, when cosmology and population really started to grow, we didn't do it just for fun. We did it to prove that no matter how far out we could go in our thought waves from where we think the center of source energy is. We thought to ourselves, can I go out into the boondocks of the universe, the cutting edge frontiers, keep pushing experience further and further out? How many universes can I make? And will I, on the outer frontiers of the edge of the cosmos as I know it, will I still have the potential to awaken and remember that I am God and every single person is source energy? And each and every one of us is a sacred relationship. That's why we have all this contrast. You can't awaken if you don't have contrast. So this is what the physical world is about, and it's messy. And great awakenings are messy, and we are in the giant shitstorm version of it. And it's going to be a very difficult year, make no mistake. But it's going to be a difficult year because the truth is going to be exposed, and nothing is going to be able to suppress it. So hoorah, people. Take some time for yourselves each and every day and just be you. And if there's things about you you don't like, hey, with all that Christ light pouring in, this would be the time to fix that because you have the entire hierarchy of light there holding your hands. It's all good. This is beautiful time, a very exciting time. Do not be disheartened. Do not give in to fear. This is an adventure. That's all it is, a brilliant adventure.
I'm babbling.
Nancy?
What?
No. I was just, since this is my last show, may I ask a favor?
Sure.
May I pray with everyone
Oh,
on this last
absolutely.
show? Okay.
Absolutely.
I would like to pray one of the most beautiful prayers I think ever written, which is the peace prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. And when I post all these things on social media, the social awareness and the prayers and all of that, believe me, I remind people to be in grace and empathy, but I do it for my sake as much as anybody else's. And we all need this reminder. Brothers and sisters, let us pray together. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. And where there is sadness, let me bring joy. Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born to eternal life.
Say what? Say what radio show? With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.